I'm smarter than the devil. I'm smarter than the devil.
You are not smarter than me. I'll see you in hell yet, Homer Simpson.
Yo, everybody, and welcome to episode 10 of Simpsons is Greater Than. As you can tell by the music, it is another October episode, and I want to thank you for joining me again this week. As always, I'm your host, Warren, also known to some of you as Bart of Darkness. You might have seen my Simpsons collection on Instagram and Twitter.
Be honest, it's great, isn't it? Go ahead and say it's great if you want to.
But if not, when you're done with this episode, I say this every week, go check it out. Now, I do want to let you guys know that I actually am working on a very Halloween-focused episode, so if you're not following the podcast closely, now's the time, because I know you want to hear that episode. But anyway, this episode is with Wes Archer, one of the best animators and directors to ever work on The Simpsons, period, and he also worked on a ton of other shows, King of the Hill, Rick and Morty, Bob's Burgers. So I think you're going to really learn a lot from what Wes has to say. So let's get into the episode right now. Episode 10, Double Digits. Let's go. Okay, so today I have my friend Wes Archer with me. I'm super excited to talk to Wes. How you doing?
Hi, Warren. I'm good.
So to kick it off with sort of, maybe sort of a deep question, how did you become interested in animation? Give me some history on your relationship to that.
Well, you know, I always loved drawing, and I did give this a bit of thought. I listened to the David Silverman podcast, which was really great hearing Dave just describe his Simpsons experience. But I think, you know, my first foray into animation was in high school, and I kind of figured out that I that's what I wanted to do. At that point, you know, so that was pretty early on. But yeah, I always loved drawing when I was a kid. My first cartoon, I was probably about 4 or 5. I drew a little cartoon for my dad. He thought it was very funny.
What was that? What did that look like?
It was entitled Charlie, You Dumb. And it was a man going pee with an upside down penis. So,
very wholesome.
The drawing was lost somewhere along the way. They saved it for years and years, but somehow it was lost.
That's so great.
But I was really into Batman and Robin. And then growing up, I was fascinated by the Three Stooges and Popeye and Looney Tunes, that kind of thing. You know, whatever was on television at the time, which was very limited, I became more into like monster movies and you know, the Bond films as a kid. So I don't know. I didn't really have a lot of art classes or instruction other than art class in school.
Well, it sounds like it was just in you, Wes. I mean, like, you know, you have such an interesting drawing style. So it's cool to know that, like, I think you sort of just found it in some way. That's really cool to me.
Yeah, I had a lot of influences. I think comic books were one. And then that kind of led to Mad Magazine.
Oh, yeah.
I guess Mad Magazine was something that eventually led me into looking at National Lampoon magazine, which I learned like way after I left The Simpsons. I think I learned that I think Mike Reiss and Al Jean actually worked at National Lampoon.
Yeah, crazy connection. Well, tell me what you remember about your first day working on The Simpsons.
Well, I started on the Tracy Ullman shorts, so. I don't remember that, you know, too well. I remember that, I'd already worked at the animation studio that animated the Simpsons shorts, which was run by Gabor Tupo and Arlene Klasky. So I was doing like freelance work for them. Gabor told me to, you know, come in and work on this Matt Groening short based on his Life in Hell calendar work. And comics and cartoons from, I think he was a weekly cartoonist in the LA Weekly or the LA Reader at the time, which I kind of followed him there. But Yeah, I thought that was going to be great. I was expecting it to be in black and white. That's what I was told.
Oh, really? Wow, never heard that.
Yeah, I think when I got there, they had already decided to do some color mock-ups.
Wow, that is something I've never heard anyone say. That's pretty incredible.
Yeah. Originally, the Simpson shorts were to be just in black and white because it was so low budget. I mean, we had I think Matt wrote it in a week, and then we animated it in 1 week. And that includes storyboards and cleanup and everything. So sometimes we would just animate it clean, you know, like do all our in-betweens with no rough drawings. So it looked very kind of crude. And then as we're going along through season one, we figured out better ways to animate it. We were just trying out all sorts of different things, but we figured out what worked and what didn't work as well. So by the second year of doing those Tracy Ullman shorts, we kind of had it looking a little more streamlined and cleaner, less clunky style.
Right. Man, I got to tell you, as much information as I, you know, have dove into with The Simpsons and all of these things, for some reason, I've never heard that tidbit about how originally it was black and white. That's really mind-boggling to me. I don't know.
Yeah. And then, it was supposed to be just like his Life in Hell comic strip. You know, when he went in to pitch it, he realized he didn't want to give up the rights to the one-eared bunny, Binky. So he created the Simpsons family based sort of on the Flintstones and Matt's inimitable style. So, yeah, I think, you know, then Georgie Pelosi threw blue hair on Marge and yellow skin, and everyone loved that. But like I said, I think, you know, after we spent a week animating it, she had 1 week to do all the ink and paint on the cells. And then the cameraman shot it in a week and they edited it in that same week and probably started the sound effects or something. So it was pretty much like a 5 week schedule for each of those shorts. We were just cranking them out.
Yeah. And I think that's really interesting too, when you know, because you hear about the process of making the actual show, but when you think back to those really early days, I don't think there's enough, you know, information or stories about that time. And I just find that all so interesting. I love hearing about, you know, the color choices and why they happened. And
yeah, we didn't have any of the technology we have now. It's all very, very analog, old school film production. So it was really like moving a mountain to get these done week after week. I remember weeks where I would work probably like 80 hour weeks just to get this animation done. But, you know, I was very young. I was 25, so I didn't have anything else to do. I just really dove into it. I think, you know, David did and Bill Kopp, and eventually Bill left to work on, I think, Roger Rabbit, or it was pretty much David and I with one or two other people helping out on animation sometimes. But it was mostly David and I finishing up the second season of the shorts. And then that led to me getting a chance to direct when it went to series. So yeah, I was 27 when we started the series. And that, again, that was just, you know, a Herculean effort by everyone. We didn't know what we were doing, you know. So, you know, the Kent Butterworth story where we brought him in to help us figure out, you know, how to direct a series. Gabor never directed half hours either. So he kind of showed us what animation timing was done was like on exposure sheets. He kind of had this kind of traditional Hanna-Barbera way of timing exposure sheets, which left a lot up to interpretation. So like the animation would come back real mushy. And then so David and I kind of devised this system of timing animation where we had shorthand symbols for all the more precise ways to animate things like the anticipation, overshoot, settle. You know, sometimes we wanted things to look more rubbery, and sometimes we wanted it to have more snap. We kind of made this more exacting shorthand for timing exposure sheets where we would get back from Korea what we wanted. So it wasn't so mushy and all over the place. That worked out really well. So by like the end of season one, it was looking better. And then season two looked great. Like I was blown away by how much better we got during season two of the series.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I can say you know, from talking to you and David, I mean, it sounds like so many things that you know, allowed the series to do what it did were a result of you guys getting to try things and figure these things out. And I just think that's so, I mean, that's so wonderful. I love hearing that.
It was very organic. Like, you know, we were able to start doing the Tracy Ullman shorts. I would just try out a bunch of different weird things. And then it gradually got narrowed down. And like I did that thing where Bart twisted his head called the twister mouth, where his mouth went one way and his head went the other way. And
I love the twister mouth. I'm a big fan of that.
Stretching the mouth past the neck and all this stuff. And then like we kind of kept doing that, but Korea really couldn't handle that consistently. And Matt decided to put the kibosh on those and like outlaw those.
It's such a sad day.
It's no more, but the mouth can't stretch beyond the neck anymore. And this is, you gotta rein it in. This is a style, you know, and look at it now. It looks amazing.
It looks amazing.
When I watch it now, I'm just, God, I miss working on it. It's so good.
Twister mouth is, and you know, there's actually this like outcry online where people, you know, really love the twister mouth and wish that, I've even seen people be like, I think this is the last twister mouth. And they sort of like, oh, this is sort of a twister mouth. And like, you know, they're really looking for those last few twister mouths.
Well, you know, they should still try it once in a blue moon.
Yeah. Once in a while. Well, I want to know, you know, and you sort of touched on this, but what was your initial reaction to just, to seeing the characters and the overall style of the show? Like when you saw what you were going to be working on, what did you think?
Well, I thought it would be just a lot of fun. But, you know, animation is never easy. So knowing that we only had 1 week, you know, that caused a lot of anxiety.
I bet.
It was very funny. It was like the, you know, Flintstones from hell or something. I mean, you know, Groening just has so much personality in his style, and it's very distinct and very particular. And I wanted to do justice to that. I didn't want to turn it into a, you know, Keebler elf version of his drawing style or water it down. I wanted to stay true to that, so that it didn't look like everything else. There's a certain tendency for animators to draw like big hands or crossed eyes or like certain things that aren't really appropriate to sticking with Matt's style. So I had a lot of respect for Matt's thing, what he was doing. Yeah, it was fun, but it was just a lot of work too.
Oh yeah, I mean, I can only imagine. Well, you know, you talk about how you started on the shorts, and it, you know, you were obviously there when it got picked up as a half hour series.
Yeah, that was great.
You know, what did you think when the show got picked up? What was your reaction to that?
Yeah, I wasn't too surprised because I knew there was something there that everyone would really like. Now I'm surprised. It's season 32.
It's crazy. And you got people like me doing this, you know?
Yeah. The
Who would have thought?
The amount of merchandise was pretty amazing too. I wish I'd bought all those early action figures and things.
Oh, I know. I mean, I see stuff all the time. In fact, I saw something today that I didn't know existed, a different sample prototype type deal. So, I mean, it's just, you know, it's sort of never ending, you know? It's just like, I think that, you know, if I could go back in a time machine to 1990, I would fill buses with the stuff, you know?
Well, yeah. Once the more sculpted heads came out, we started using them a little bit to actually draw the characters at different angles.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. When it went to series, I was tasked to putting together the first model pack. So I would get drawings from everyone, and we hired a character designer who had a Disney background, which kind of pushed the style into something a little too different from what we were doing. So I had to kind of rein that in and kind of rework those drawings to be more on model. Yeah, it was kind of nice how the characters kind of drifted off model and back on model. But
oh yeah, I'm a big fan of that myself. Do you think that What do you think it is about, you know, the style of those characters that really captured people? Like, do you think it's just because it was so different, or what do you think it was?
Yeah, it was fresh. It was a fresh style, and it was thoughtful, and it was just very well written. And the voices were also very fresh.
Totally agree.
And the timing, I think we had very good timing. Our staging was different. I mean, under the producer's vision to respect the stories as real stories and not giving in to cartoon tendency to be too goofy, I guess. It wasn't like we were working at your typical cartoon studio. So I think that really resonated with everyone. And even the colors, I mean, the color department came up with some amazing color schemes.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite things about the show. And, you know, I think too, you know, to say that it felt fresh, I mean, I've said this before, but I'm, you know, the same age as the show, if you count the shorts. Mm-hmm. And so I was watching, you know, season 1, season 2, when I was super, super young. And, you know, I, you know, obviously grew up liking lots of cartoons, but The Simpsons always, you know, it had a feel that just wasn't the same. And something that my friend Alex pointed out on a recent episode is that I think The Simpsons also lent itself really well to like something that a child would want to draw. You know, it's circles and shapes and it's very interesting characters. So I think, you know, to a child's mind, even there was something visually about it that just, you know, it felt different, something they wanted to try to draw. And it just really kind of clawed its way into their brain.
Yeah, it really had kind of an edge to it, but it also had a lot of heart. Like it was something, and you know, it still is. I think people appreciated that there was a little devilishness in there, but the characters weren't portrayed as being evil or thinking evil thoughts or being vindictive. They were just people having problems.
Yeah.
The problems were real problems and funny problems and serious problems and funny problems. And it was very exploratory. I think the writers were very expansive, and under the direction of Sam Simon, they really took it places where cartoons hadn't been before, and these characters were the perfect vehicle to go there, because they weren't too cutesy, and they weren't too, like, obviously, you know, like dangerous or dangerous looking or anything. They were skewed and flawed, you know, American family people.
Yeah. I think everyone can relate to that. And I love you saying that about the colors too, because, you know, something else I've talked about a lot, I think the color palette of The Simpsons, you know, there's just so many amazing colors. Like the pinkish color that is the color of some of the walls and the shorts is one of my favorite colors ever. I've like tried to PMS match that, and I've tried, like, I mean, there's just so many amazing colors that are just...
I don't think people use pink that much. I mean, there's the Pink Panther, and that was... Actually, I really enjoyed that show when I was a kid.
Oh yeah.
Pre laugh track Pink Panther. The first couple, like, actually that was one of the first animated shows. We're going off track here, but
no, go off track, Wes. Go ahead.
That's one of the first things I saw, which actually made me think about timing, like actual, like what timing was in animation. I think it was probably that and the Roadrunner show. But yeah, pink, you didn't see a whole lot of pink. Pink wasn't a commonly used color until, you know, I guess the 80s, and especially on the Simpsons, I think, you know, and like, it's a very popular color now. Very popular.
Yeah. Well, the, you know, just the house in general, like all the colors are amazing. Like I think it's just, it's a real, you know, again, to mention my friend Alex, she described it as just, you know, these like eye bleeding colors. Like they're just colors you don't see anywhere. They're just,
yeah, they spent a lot of work on those, you know, working with what, you know, what greens would go with what earth tones and purples and blues. And we would have sequences that would have special color schemes. You know, then we started getting into having shadows. That was really great when we started really having some sequences in light and shadow. I remember Two Cars in Every Garage and Three Eyes on Every Fish. There's a lot of shading and moody color schemes in that one.
Yeah, no, it's great. I totally agree.
I was thinking about it the other day. One of the things that got me thinking about animation, like literally how to animate, was being in the Houston Astrodome. They would have these animated displays on the scoreboard when someone would hit a home run or score a touchdown. You know, I just went to 3 or 4 or 5, you know, ball games at the Astrodome, but every time I went, I was completely fascinated with the scoreboard animation. I don't know what they call the process, but it's these elaborate lights.
Now it's really interesting to hear like what little things like sort of like set you on that path in some way, or maybe you don't realize mm-hmm. it and you go, you know, one of the first things that really got to me were these things inside of a stadium. I think that's awesome too.
That was definitely an influence on my young brain.
What do you think the biggest challenge of directing an animated show is?
It's always just making the deadlines, really. I mean, it depends on how the script is, how complicated the script is. But it seems like you never have quite enough time as you'd like. I find the most challenging part is staging the shots and just bringing it, you know, after that, bringing everything together is pretty fun until, you know, you have to turn it in. You have to think about that deadline.
Yeah, that's, I'm sure the loomingness of that. And that makes sense, you know.
Yeah, I love to draw acting. One of the things about these primetime cartoon shows that acting is you really get to do a lot of great stuff. Simpsons has a lot of great acting. King of the Hill did.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm going to touch on all that a little bit.
Acting is very important, but you know, you always start off with staging. You have to rein in the perspectives and the screen direction and placement of characters and everything. And once you get that all set up, you can have fun with the acting.
Yeah. Well, you know, speaking of that, you shared your original storyboard for Moaning Lisa a while ago on your Instagram, and I'm curious, do you keep a lot of that kind of stuff? I hope so.
I have a fair amount, but I sold quite a bit of it a few years ago. It was sitting in the garage, and there's silverfish getting to it.
Oh, it breaks my heart, Wes.
I wanted to sell it and get it into the hands of people who would value that sort of thing. And I hung on to stuff that I didn't want to lose. But that storyboard is amazing because it's so simple compared to today's storyboard panels. If you look at that storyboard on my Instagram, Archermation, it's very, very simple. And the panels, they're all very small. And there's, I think, 4 panels per page. And there's not a whole lot of acting on the panels either. So a lot of the acting we would communicate through these exposure sheets using thumbnail drawings and our, you know, shorthand for how to move stuff around, kind of as a blueprint for the Korean animators to follow. So we accomplished a lot of the acting that way. But if you compare that storyboard to modern day boards, it's just ridiculous how different they are.
I can only imagine.
You know, yeah, because we have digital drawing tablets and we can copy and paste at will. We can import a soundtrack and sync it up and do all these things. And, you know, it's so much faster and better. But at the same time, since it's faster and better, the production pipeline is more demanding. Like, it doesn't make our job easier because we have to deliver more and faster now.
Oh, you're more efficient. So do like, you know, yeah. Instead of 5, do 10, you know?
So now we're required to do 20 times the work we used to be required to do, but it's fun. And I do miss paper and pencil, but it's a very slow process and very time consuming. So yeah, when you go back and look at those initial storyboards for Moaning Lisa that I posted, they're very kind of crude, but when you look at the final product, it's so good.
Oh yeah.
And well, the reason it's so good is because after the storyboards, we have the layout stage where the layout crew redraws everything on animation paper. So these are like real character artists that take those crude storyboard drawings and redraw them as large, nice drawings.
I talked to David Silverman a few weeks ago, and you know, he really praised you and your many contributions to the show. You know, I'm curious, what is an example of a type of scene that you would really get inspired by when you read it in the script? Something that would just get you excited to work on it?
Well, those scripts were so good. I just, you know, it's impossible to like just pick something out, because I guess I was really spoiled by getting those scripts. You know, but it's so exciting to get a new script and read it. And I would just want to work on the whole thing. Sometimes I would really have my hand in almost every scene. Yeah. I liked drawing all of the characters, really.
Nah, that's awesome. Well, you know, if you take a look at your list of director credits, you know, on The Simpsons, it's sort of amazing. Well, and beyond The Simpsons, but it's sort of amazing how many of them are absolute favorite episodes of mine. You know, Bart the Daredevil, Three Men in a Comic Book, The Otto Show, Rosebud, New Kid on the Block, Bart Sells His Soul. I mean, these are all just classic episodes, you know, both from comedy and just visually. You know, the visual comedy of them are just some of my absolute favorites. Do you have any memories of episodes that you were sort of worried about as you were working on them? It sounds like maybe not, since you said you were spoiled.
Well, I did 26 episodes, or 25 and a third, I think, because one was a Halloween episode, so I did one act. And I shared directing credit on one with Milt Gray, but I pretty much directed that entire episode. Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? So you had Danny DeVito doing Homer's brother. So that was it was a little intimidating because, you know, you have Danny DeVito doing this character, and Homer's got to design this amazingly weird, goofy car, the mobile. What was it called? The Bulge Mobile or the Homer?
The Homer.
That one was daunting. And then, like, we were trying out the car designs, and then Matt Groening just did this really funny, quick drawing of the car with all the stuff. You know, he wanted, like, it was kind of a dumb drawing, but it had, you know, cup holder, antenna, bubble here, you know, bubble there, you know, hood ornament, bowling guy is hood ornament, you know, all that stuff. And like, yeah, okay, great. So this is the car. We got that now. It turned out pretty well, though.
Oh, it did. I mean, it's also a classic. Well, speaking of Bart the Daredevil, you know, that episode has one of the most beloved scenes of the entire series, you know, Homer going over the gorge. Something you see referenced so much. You know, they bring it back. They use it to make jokes in the future as well. You know, where does that episode rank on the Wes Archer list?
Yeah, that's up there with probably number one. Yeah.
Wow.
My favorites would be, I got the list in front of me right here on Wikipedia.
Oh, beautiful. I'd love to hear it.
My favorites would be, Two Cars in Every Garage and Three Eyes in Every Fish, Bart the Daredevil, Three Men in a Comic Book. So, like, I'm very fond of season two.
That's a great one.
That was a big year. I did a lot of work, and I spent a lot of time at the studio, and I just loved those scripts and loved the people I was working with. I guess from the later, I like Homer Loves Flanders a lot. And I actually like Two Bad Neighbors.
Two Bad Neighbors is really good. Yeah. I mean, seriously, there's so many classics from those seasons. And when you look at a list of episodes from those, you know, years that you were there, but more specifically ones you worked on directly, it's pretty astonishing how many of them are favorites, like I said. And, you know, it's funny speaking of the gorge sequence, when I spoke to Mike Scully, he told me that Bart the Daredevil was the first episode of the show he ever saw. Well before he worked on the show. And he said that that scene in particular, you know, just Homer falling and then the ambulance hitting the tree and him falling back down the gorge. He said that that's when he realized he loved the show. He just you know, he just was obsessed with it after that.
So, well, you know, from my memory, what I remember is initially at the first animatic, they rescued Homer and then the ambulance crashed into a tree, the end. And then at the animatic, someone in the writer's room said, have it roll back out of the ambulance and fall back down the cliff again. I think it was Sam Simon.
Amazing.
But I could be wrong, but then they added that. And so we had him fall down the cliff again, but wrapped up in bandages, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a great sequence.
Yeah. It's so good. Well, you know, I could honestly sit here and pick your brain about every episode that you ever worked on, but I do want to talk about Rosebud a little, because Rosebud is one of my favorite episodes. I actually watched it today because I was just thinking about it, getting ready for this interview. And, you know, what was it like to work on an episode that showed characters like Burns in such a different light, you know, a way that we had never seen them?
Well, I'd watched Citizen Kane by Orson Welles years ago, before I got that script. So I understood the references. That was a very expansive episode. And I love drawing Mr. Burns. He's probably my favorite character to draw. I actually love drawing Mo. I like drawing Mo the bartender and Mr. Burns. So yeah, that was an amazing episode. What was it? Season 5.
Season 5.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the first David Merkin season.
Yeah.
And I think it's funny, you know, to hear that like 5 and 6 people were worried about, and honestly 5 and 6 are two of my favorite seasons.
Yeah, Merkin came in, and I remember when Burns was rising out of the birthday cake. Was that in a Smithers flashback?
Yeah, it was Smithers. Well, since I watched it today, it's fresh on my brain. But it's when Burns said that he wouldn't get what he wanted for his birthday, and Smithers said, "You never do." Yeah. And he imagines Burns coming out of the cake.
Yeah. Merkin kept saying, "Make Burns rise out slower." And then years later, a couple of years later, when Homer came through the bushes, that was Homer Loves Flanders. That was the same season.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of episodes later, Homer comes out of the bushes. Make him come out of the bushes slower, slower, slower.
I didn't know David was so obsessed with that. That's really great. I mean, it makes those jokes funnier, I think.
Oh, yeah. He's hilarious. He knows his stuff.
Well, you know, I've read that David Silverman, he working as supervising director on Rosebud, said that it was a challenging episode to direct. Why do you think that is?
It was very dense. A lot of stuff in there.
A lot going on. A lot happens in that episode. I feel like, you know, a lot of ups and downs. Like, it goes a lot of interesting places.
So a lot of design work. There's a lot of filmic play. It's the whole bear montage. There's the celebrity guest of the Ramones, right?
I was just about to ask you. I know that you actually designed their characters, which I think is really cool. Apparently you did.
I guess I had a hand in that. I don't remember.
Oh, man. Well, you're credited as that, but I'm curious if you were a Ramones fan at all before they were on the show.
Yeah, I was. Yeah. I mean, I still am.
Yeah,
but
me too.
I don't listen to their music much anymore, but I did have a Ramones cassette back in the 80s, a Ramones cassette or two.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm sure. And I love hearing how much of a career highlight it was for those guys. Like, I hear they were just like ecstatic to be on the show. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, they were really into comic books. I never met them. I didn't get a chance to meet them. So
it's a bummer.
I was disappointed.
I bet. I would be too.
I laid out the poses on a lot of those scenes. Might have influenced the design.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, maybe that's it. But or you could just take the credit. I'm just going to give you the credit, Wes.
Yeah, I think I definitely designed those scenes. I had a hand in those scenes.
You know, it's speaking of that scene, it's amazing. Obviously, it's been a favorite. But when you watch it, especially, you know, thinking about it so much, talking to you about it right now, all the scenes with, you know, Homer telling the jokes, the joke about the dog dying right before Homer goes on. Like, there are just so many amazing jokes in that scene.
And what did he say? Mr. Burns is a stupid head. I don't know what he said.
Yeah, he like pulls his pants down. You know, he's got the frowny face.
Hey, Mr. Burns, look at me.
Wow, Wes, you do a really good Homer.
Thank you.
No, it's really good. It's really good. Well, for anyone who doesn't know, you know, you've worked on so many things other than The Simpsons, you know, King of the Hill, Futurama, Bob's Burgers. You're currently supervising director on Rick and Morty. And I also got to know, what is it like being immortalized in an episode of King of the Hill, and how did that come about?
Oh, yeah. This Wesley Martin Archer character. Good name for a killer.
It is.
I guess they just like me as a killer because they wanted to write into the show.
it's such a great drawing.
Yeah, that was very satisfying to have have your own likeness in an animated character.
And one of my favorite King of the Hill episodes, also.
I have very high standards, so whenever you mention an episode, I gotta confess, my brain goes right to something I didn't like about it. like going back to the Ramones. I wanted the lead singer to have this kick, like Joey has this certain kick mm-hmm. where he kicks his leg up, and I don't think that was done right. And then when you go to the Wesley Martin Archer character, there was a Mike Judge drawing with the Wesley Martin Archer eyes that were funnier than the way that the eyes came out in the final episode. Mm. So I'm disappointed that the eyes don't look more like it was more of a butthead kind of eyeball.
Well, I do think it's funny that when you search for your name on Google, that's one of the first images that comes up. So I know that's killing you right now, Wes.
It's kind of dicey because like maybe they think I'm really like that or something.
No.
Maybe I should have done that.
No, anyone listening to this, Wes is not like that. He's a very nice guy. He's a great guy. So he's not that character, I can assure you.
Yeah, well, I did have problems with the law in high school.
Well, me too.
I was a free range child.
Yeah, you know, I can relate. I like to get into a little bit of trouble. So hey, you know,
Yeah. But it stopped when I figured out that I wanted to be an animator, and I was 18, and then things stay on your record.
It's true. So that's the real answer. When people ask you, you know, how did you get into animation? It's like, well, I wanted to not go to jail.
I wanted to stay out of trouble.
I love it. Well, you know, I'm sure you're still hard at work on Rick and Morty, you know, during all of this, and I'm curious. How have you been adjusting to directing digitally? How's that been for you?
Digitally is, you know, it's great now. But I mean, now we're all at home in the age of COVID lockdown. So
yeah.
It's great to have the digital process, you know, the pipeline. It was kind of a steep learning curve starting in, I think, 2009. They didn't give us a lot of time to ramp up to learn this stuff. You know, the programs we work to, they get these updates, and every couple of years they would make it a little better, less buggy. So, you know, I guess it was like kind of rough going for 4 or 5 years until it kind of settled in to the new production pipeline. And it's great. I mean, like I said, it's faster and better. There's something about drawings on paper that capture the essence of like the life force in the through the animator's brain and through his fingers onto the paper. Mm-hmm. It just has a certain kind of life that you don't see in digital animation. It's you could do so much more, so much faster.
Yeah, I heard, you know, David said that, you know, they're finding it's more efficient in some ways to, you know, animate digitally too. So I'm curious to see what impact that has moving forward if things get back to any sense of normalcy.
Yeah, it's much more efficient. I don't know what the production process is on The Simpsons anymore, though.
I would love to hear you guys talk about it. That's a podcast I would listen to.
I mean, I think it's probably similar to what we do on Rick and Morty or what they do on Family Guy now or any other show.
Well, what is the process? You say you don't know what it's like on The Simpsons currently. For Rick and Morty, what is that process like, and how is it different?
Well, it just goes script and then storyboard and then, you know, design and color, and then it's actually we don't have exposure sheets because we use an animation studio in Canada that times out the animation well, and we thoroughly pose out our animatics so that they have a lot of timing and posing to go off of. Mm. So compared to old fashioned Simpsons, there's no layout department and no timing department.
Well, one thing that I do want to ask you about, because I thought this was so funny, and I actually don't think this made it into my David interview, but he mentioned a story where you gave a speech over the intercom on your last day. And I want to know if I can hear this story.
Okay. Well, okay. This was not my last day. This was after season two when I decided to take a year off. So, you know, it's like working really hard all throughout the Tracy Ullman show and then the first 2 years of the series, right?
Mm-hmm.
And for season two, I did 5 1/3 episodes. I don't know if you know, but most directors only do 2 or 3 episodes a year. I did 5 1/3.
You're a madman, Wes.
And I was spending all my time at the studio, and I'm like, okay, for season three, I want to do 2 episodes, and season 4, I want to do 2 episodes. And take some time off, which is what I did. So I had like sort of a last day on season two. And this was before, right before they moved the show from Klasky Csupo to Film Roman. Mm. So I got on the intercom and I did some comedy speech about Gabor. I peed in your car, or like I went through a list of people and like said my goodbyes, but it was all kind of weird. And I took my revenge on everyone before I left or something. I don't know. I think it was a bunch of inside jokes that I've completely forgotten. I have no idea what I said other than Gabor, I peed on your car, I think.
That's amazing. Well, you know, I've said this to a couple of different people, but it is true. Think of all the stuff that's in your head that you have to try to remember. So I can't expect you to remember every detail like that.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Well, you know, as I do want to talk about merchandise a little bit. You know, as a collector, I like to see how people from the show remember the merch in the 90s. And, you know, I'm curious if you did, you know, collect any of it, or if nothing else, what did you hold on to as far as, you know, staff gifts or just things from those early years? I'm curious.
I have a Bart Simpson maquette head that was sculpted by Dale Hendrickson. I have some really interesting cells from Tracy Ullman shorts. Mm-hmm. Not too much from that, from those days. I have like two or three of those. And I have, yeah, some cells, and I have some drawings and Xerox copies of an old model pack or something. But and a lot of odds and ends drawings from other artists, a couple of really funny David Silverman drawings. And I have this weird comic strip from a bar that we drew when we won the first Emmy. And it's Sam Simon, Jennifer Tilly, and David Silverman and myself drew this comic strip. I have a couple original graining sketches for character designs. Yeah, I have like, you know, some t-shirts, but a lot of that stuff I gave away or sold it, or, you know, just kind of, I didn't hang on to everything.
And I do hear that a lot, and that I do find that interesting. I mean, but I also understand, I mean, it's, you know, so much stuff. It'd be a lot to keep up with.
Well, I wish I was able to hang on to more layout drawings, but those were all sent to Korea. That's what I really wanted to keep, but there's no way to keep those. So likewise with storyboards, you have to turn it in and then it's gone. And I neglected to make copies on the Xerox machines. So yeah, back in the day when we were first starting out, we had a hell of a time getting people to draw these characters because they were so different from what people were used to drawing in the animation business.
Right.
And there were no, yeah, there's no precedent. And then, like, one time they gave me this guy, they hired this guy from either Ruby Spears or Hanna-Barbera. And, you know, he had 20 years of experience. He turned in his work and it was drawn in ballpoint pen. Like, we weren't going to do any revisions because he's so good.
Wow.
And it wasn't good.
Ugh.
And I was working late. It was not only him, but another guy from the same background had turned in work in blue pencil that I had to redo all of it. And there was no time to hand it back for them to do. And they weren't even going to fix it the right way anyway. So I might as well just work late and do it myself, right?
Right.
So I took some of their originals, and they were open windows on the second floor in the studio. And I just tossed them out the window because there were dumpsters below the window in the driveway. So the idea was to toss them so they would land in the dumpster. But some of them landed around the dumpster on the ground. And I worked all night redoing, you know, trying to redo this stuff. And in the morning, our production manager walked in and she saw the drawings on the floor and picked them all up and had all these drawings stacked in her arms. And I hear her high heels clacking down the hallway towards me. Wes, what are you doing? Why are these outside? She was just aghast that I would, you're throwing money out the window. And I had to explain to her that it was a lost cause. I think it's kind of sad that I would do that, or, you know, but at the time I thought it was appropriate.
Yeah.
Because I was dumbfounded at how crazy these drawings were that they had turned in, expecting to get paid for it. And some of them were drawn in ballpoint pen.
God, I would love to see what those looked like. I would love to just have
a point of reference. It's funny. So, yeah, years later, David Silverman and myself used to laugh at these tests we would get for people applying for work to work on it. And some of the drawings they would turn in were so funny in an off-model way. We would save them. And we started making up our own little silly characters based on these weird drawings. Anyway, that's kind of an inside baseball story.
No, I love that. I'm gonna keep every single bit of that. Well, you know, Wes, you're one of my favorite people that ever worked on the show.
Okay,
and I'm a big fan of all the stuff you did with the show, your contributions to the style of the art, the characters, the episodes you directed. Just, I feel like you did so much. And I think everyone who might not be aware of that should become aware right now. And,
Thank you.
I just want to say thanks for, you know, hanging out and talking to me. And, you know, I'd love to, figure out some more questions down the line and do this again sometime.
Okay. Thanks. I just think it paid off. You know, I entered the animation business, and my underlying thought was that I wanted to bring animation into more of an adult, into adult genres, basically. And that's what I had hoped for. And it came true. I ended up getting a job on The Simpsons, which did that. And so it worked out.
Before we go, I do want to ask, is there anything you're working on or anything you have coming up that you want to plug or just tell people about?
Working on my posture. Animators have hunched backs. Yeah, I'm trying to produce a little cartoon of my own. It's called Here You Go, Bud. I post clips sometimes on Instagram. So I want to post one per month on my YouTube channel. Pretty difficult, but it's doable because I'm going back to the Tracy Ullman approach, where I have no model sheets, almost no model sheets. I made mouth charts, but I'm just kind of like keeping it very simple and animating it straight ahead, like with no roughs. I just animate it straight ahead with, you know, clean drawings. And I have, you know, the Toon Boom Storyboard Pro technology to work with, so it's easier. So I give myself like 1 month, which is a 4 or 5 week schedule, same as Tracy Ullman's show. I try to keep it very, very simple. You know, I do all the voices myself and everything. But it's not easy to do, but the first story is like 10 parts, so I have to do 10 of these to finish that story. And it's called Here You Go, Bud.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, Wes, again, you know, thanks a lot, and I'll definitely be in touch. And
thanks, Warren.
Yeah, enjoy the rest of your night.
All right, Warren. Have a good night.
If you enjoyed this podcast, check out the official Instagram at Simpsons is Greater Than, or follow me on Twitter at Simpsons is Great. If you're curious about me or my Simpsons collection, just search for Bart of Darkness on Instagram and Twitter. Thanks again for checking this out. I'll see you next week.